Zach, Francis Hunt, how are you?
Very well, Francis. How are you?
Yes, indeed. Enjoying the British sunshine for the long weekend. What a fabulous long weekend it's been so far that brings us the sunshine, this rare seen entity.
Well, I thought you were going to say it's the summer, but in fact, it is just barely spring. So, who knows what it's going to be like, the Sahara Desert by July.
The assumption of continuation there is a very big one, I would say. Excellent. Well, we've had an interesting week, haven't we, Just? We had the non-farm number, which was slightly a bit forestalled or overshadowed by Yellen's dovish overtones prior to non-farm. But the number was a beat, wasn't it? What's your take?
Well, I took part in this little Twitter thing, where all the everybody tries to guess what the number's going to be. And some joker came up with 77,000, and he had all these sort of low, 180, 190 was the sort of thing that most people went for. That I went for 221. I was 6,000 out. I was very disappointed because 215 was the level I was actually thinking of. But I thought, well, that's a bit too obvious. But there we are. No, it was what I expected. But in fact, the non-farms have just become almost irrelevant because they are just always in the same ballpark. So there's no real trade. There's no real trading angle or edge to them anymore. People have got to go for other things now, really.
It actually seems the tone of the central bank. I mean, we have gone totally from a price discovery mechanism to a central banker's ping pong match, haven't we? The key drivers are that which is being said by the central banker of the day, ergo either BOJ, ECB particularly, and the Fed probably most essentially.
Well, yeah, but that's true. But it's ironic, given that they've got literally it's the emperor's new clothes. I mean, they've got no clothes. I mean, with interest rates at these levels, and all they're going for is easing. There's nothing left. I mean, this is a 7-year policy which has run its course for everyone.
It's interesting if we refer back to that holding pattern. I've done a share screen here, and for those that will be on the podcast only, you won't be able to have visual of this, but I've put up the Euro USD, and we seem to be approaching the August highs. We're not there yet. The August stroke October highs, Zach, of just through the 115s. We're at 114.17 at the moment. This is at the getting to the hard yards now on the Euro USD. It seems that the equity has been maintained in a bull market that will foreshow any likelihood of a reversal. It might not be long before the shoulders on those head and shoulders we saw are actually run and invalidated. But we are also at the end of our tether in terms of how far the euro can go against this dollar, unless this turns into a full-blown reversal. In other words, we're still just within the confines of it being a downside continuation pattern. What's your take on currencies and its effect with the equities and the Fed, all of it together?
I think that you're sort of been in the market for more than 3 months. You tend to have these relationships between markets in your mind, and it should have been the case that, for instance, with euro dollar at 114, the DAX, let's say, would be 9,000 or 9,200 rather than 9,900 or 800 at the moment. So the relationships are out the window. I think you're right in the sense that you're hinting at something's got to snap at some point, that the euro can't keep going up and the DAX or the equities keep going up. So you'd either think the euro is going to go down and that will allow equities to continue going up or whatever. But and it's the same with dollar yen as well. Dollar yen is towards the low end of the range, but the equity should be much weaker given where dollar yen is as well. So the whole risk on, risk off thing has gone out the window, that relationship. Again, gold is strong. You would have thought with gold so strong, equities wouldn't be so strong as well. So something's out of line, but I don't think we necessarily know what it is yet.
That's right. I've just pulled up the dollar yen for you there. And I mean, it's very similar setup in terms of its head and shoulders on a daily time frame to the equities, but it's a completely different narrative. It's just not rallied at all. This is what leads me to believe that there's still a sucker's element. It sounds like somebody who doesn't want to give up on his view here, because clearly the US equities have rallied far stronger than expected.
Well, I
put
it's
my
quite
hand
simple.
Up and admit that. But the yen is just, you know, it's sitting at 111.
Yes, but it's quite simple. It's obvious that the equities are being helped up or kept up, and it's a cosmetic situation, especially in the U.S. is totally cosmetic, and elsewhere is obviously following on that. You know, and it's almost like whatever happens, there may be a new war in Azerbaijan or North Korea, or somebody gets shot or anything. I mean, there's disease, there's pestilence. These equities are going up.
I love the totally cosmetic analogy. Is that why they're the leaders in plastic surgery there, Jack?
Well, yes, even I think, when did Putin have his facelift? I think it was years ago now, isn't it?
Oh, Putin's on the other side of the fence. Interesting. So we've got the yen actually moping at its lows against the dollar, which is still showing that the fear didn't get dealt with. It was spilling, but it got put on ice. It's no longer spilling, but it's in a very unhappy halfway house, while the indices are actually coming close to nullifying those head and shoulder patterns, and the euro is at the approaching the top end of its range against the dollar since the big fall, since the bazooka I'll do whatever it takes took us from 140 down to 105. So how's it going to break? This is all about the Phoenix reset. Could this be, when it's allowed to unwind, could this be the one that sees something go disorderly? Is this the point when they let the euro USD go down the other way, say tops out, reverses, and then it breaks through parity? Will that then be the turn for the equity markets, do you think?
Well, yeah, but the heading back the other way towards parity would mean that the equities have a soaring move. And the problem with
strength is going to be in the US, you would expect both dollar strength and the equities to continue whammy there.
But what I'm saying is if the euro doesn't go back down to, 110, 105 pretty soon, you're going to have, the relationship with everything. You can't have euro dollar going to 115, 120 and the Dow going to 20,000. I mean, that can't work, can it?
I would have seen. I don't believe at a global macro view that we could have both the dollar strong and the indices running, the U.S. indices running. The relative valuation generally is so already skewed, in my view.
There's one concept you haven't mentioned so far, and that's the one of inflation. And the reason the explanation that the markets are not out of kilter or not wrong is because we do allegedly now have 2% inflation in the US, and the return of inflation does change a lot of things. If it really is the return of inflation, it would mean that we're getting back to a more normal pattern for equities. Inflation is generally good for equities, at least under sort of
Yes, but inflation in terms of the currency, if there's no interest rate rises, should see higher devaluation of the currency in the country. And Yellen's come out all dovish, saying, okay, we're originally guiding four, or banks were certainly interpreting our guidance on four rate hikes. No one believed that, not you, not I, and not the crowd that we do our shows together with. But nonetheless, they're backing off on the rate hikes, which should be what strengthens the currency. So this is where the relationships have gone all a bit confusing for us all. Because if they're not doing the rate hikes at the rates originally planned, then the currency should actually should be weakening, which it is to a small degree now. And that's allowing their equities in a relative valuation kind of way to grind up, because they're just holding ground with the currency loss of value at a sort of global macro level. How do you cross the I's and T's and I's on dot the I's and all of that?
I think that what you've got to do is probably what your what you're not, what to do the opposite of what you're suggesting, in the sense that you've got to go on each market individually. So if you are trading dollar yen, you just look at dollar yen and you look at it to go to 105 or 106 once it breaks 110.50. If you're trading euro dollar, you go with this move to the upside while it's above, let's say, 112.50, etc., etc.
But for me, if the dollar yen starts its journey back south again, we should, that's the fear index again, we should be driving indices lower.
No, I agree with that, but the problem is that that's not, you know, I'd be more concerned about trying to make some money than getting the relationships right.
Absolutely.
You know, comes down to that. I mean, really, dollar yen, you would say, well, actually, if the, you know, the equities are all, you know, the DAX and the Dow, etc., FTSE are all rising, I'd actually be buying the yen on dips and going with that, because the governing market here looks to be, you know, the equity market. You know, that's the weird thing. It's the tail wagging the dog, or whatever, you know, whatever the analogy is. But it is the priority for central bankers looks to be equities.
I totally concur with that. And you know why I believe it is so? It's because I believe by the time you add currency effect into it, you lose most people. In other words, they just understand market up equals good, especially in the US. So it's, we're at all-time highs, and you know that means the economy is good, and it's a simple, you know, A plus B equals C. If everybody's right about it being so bad, how come the stock market's doing so great? It gives the CNBC talking heads narrative exactly what they need to get everyone to shut up, keep on carrying on.
Yes, and this is a new development. It's actually something which, if they'd known or realized 7 or 8 years ago, they would have just bought stocks rather than lowering interest rates. It would have been a better, that, you know, well, doing what the Chinese are doing, which I think is basically just buying stocks, amongst many other things, obviously. But doing what, you know, that direct, shameless intervention is actually the right thing to do. And probably, you know, it's like in the Eurozone, it would have been cheaper to buy shares in Deutsche Bank and, you know, Banco Italia or whatever the ailing bank is there, Spirito Santo in Portugal, etc. Doing that. In fact, that's actually what, in a way, that's what the UK government did. It really went for the, buying the
ownership.
Buying the banking stocks. In fact, they didn't actually need to buy the banks themselves. They should have just bought the shares. I think that would have been a cheaper option than actually buying RBS, etc. Just saying, look, we're buying the shares. What are you going to do?
So this is the great British Leyland socialist solution nowadays. Every major macro corporate that gets into trouble is effectively nationalized with taxpayers' largesse.
Well, it's the People's Bank of China approach. I'm glad that the Western capitalists have learned something from their Far Eastern friends.
Wow. So that's the new reality. Governments will intervene and keep the big businesses in the go. By the way, on that note, it's worth reminding everybody who's not a regular follower of the show that that was one of the key things that came out of Draghi's meeting, that instead of just buying corporate bond debt, they could buy of banks, they could buy of any investment grade, and we all know about the ratings agency and their due diligence. So just write in your own mind any big corporation, which could be VW, for example, in Germany, or Mercedes-Benz or Daimler, etc. So we seem to be laying the groundwork for a corporatocracy which can never fail at the expense of the tax payer.
Well, I think that was it's cheaper to do that than it is to have the massive destabilization effect of zero interest rates, which I think most people agree has been a disaster, because it distorts prices, it distorts inflation. And it's something that, as you said, people understand that. People can see, you know, it's a feel-good thing. It's the cheapest bang for the central bank or government buck.
But it just seems like then government becomes the anti-hedge fund, buying all guaranteed-to-fail businesses.
Well, I mean, but I think it's a bit different. I'm not talking about nationalizing. I'm talking about literally buying the shares and supporting the stock market, which I think is a bit of a different thing. I mean, obviously, British Steel will be a different situation, but it's, I suppose, with British Steel, rather than nationalizing it, they might say the equivalent would be to say to, some large manufacturing group, well, why don't you buy, you know, like Lloyd's had to buy into HBOS. you help another entity. I can't think of a big manufacturing company here, but maybe there are a few. But you allow another private entity or a private entity to have a share or to sort of bail that out. So it's a sort of second degree thing. I think the Lloyd's HBOS thing was a good example, really.
I just feel it opens the doors for a lot of cronies close to government to pick up assets on the cheap.
Unfortunately, Francis, that always happens anyway.
I agree. It just seems the scale seems to be on a far larger basis. I do recognize there's a difference between someone like the Fed printing up a ton of money and just buying a broad index to keep the market going up. That is already not necessarily got bankruptcies in it. But I don't think the end outcome, when you eventually have true market forces, and as I say, you can only hold back the tide so long. Surely the crash, just you're storing up just a bigger crash when it comes.
Well, that, you say that, but unfortunately you could die of old age before it happens. I think this thing has already gone on. I mean, for instance, the Japanese model is obviously 25 years, so you know it can go on a long time. And you've got this zombie Alice in Wonderland type of market situation. But, the problem
in
is...
In the Japanese model, though, the Nikkei fell from 40,000 down to 6,000, you know, essentially. It was allowed to adjust. And that's one heck of a fall. So as much as we people talk about Japan, we're not in the same case as Japan, in exactly the same case as Japan is. In my view, if they did let certain things re-rate, property prices absolutely collapsed. I mean, they went from one particular palace being worth more than all of Manhattan, and that re-rated. They deflated. They allowed that the market mechanisms to take some of the froth away, and it just seems we're thinking that we can forego that or postpone it indefinitely.
Well, I think the problem is that, for instance, with the UK real estate market, property market, the people who are waiting for it to crash, 2009, 10, 11, 12, etc. You know, every year, in fact, it's actually getting that much more inflated and that much better for the people who are involved in it. So if you bailed out of it, you've actually got to let it crash on you. I mean, there's no way of timing that end point.
Well, we're already seeing, I've seen a number of articles on the super prime and prime markets in London. The lending criteria being immensely tightened. So the banks themselves are recognizing this and they're already walking away. In other words, the loan to values and the rates, people are having to pay much higher rates now over prime, the fixed rate. And then there's this huge rift of people that are in between each layer. So what you'll have is the chasm between those not on the property market and those in the property market as asset values have advanced so much, get further broadened by the fact that the lenders are now being hindsight wise and realizing they're setting up the next move. So it's an even bigger gap for somebody to leap from being off the ladder onto the ladder. And that just means there's no bid under the market. And it's almost like a gap that needs to be filled in price behavior. You know, the volume hasn't come up anymore. And there's a big air pocket that is being created for the UK top end market to slump into.
Well, I think that the problem with that is that there's a lot of cash. I think 30% of people own their properties outright. I mean, there's a lot of people in there with a lot of wealth which is not related to the mortgage rate. I think the main threat to the property, the housing market in the UK is actually probably going to be the social have and have not thing rather than anything else, and that's going to be an issue, really. People just saying, well, you know, these people, you know, they're multimillionaires for doing nothing, and here am I sweating away getting £2,000 a month working in a call center, or £1,500 a month. That's the real trouble that could come through at some time, and I think that's probably more of an immediate, that's probably a bigger threat than
the skewing of the Gini curve you're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's the thing, that you've got idiots
wealth
who've made
millions.
Yeah. And people are working hard who've not. And at some point, that will be a problem.
So is it time to get our Freemasonry membership card to make sure that we're part of the easier...
There's an issue. I think that people are doing well. People are sitting on a million or two in a property. They don't contribute to civil unrest. They don't become disaffected, and that's the problem, that the people who are out of the sort of this enjoyable real estate market, you know, the younger people as well, that, you know, it looks, it's a rather unfair world for them.
So what's your trade right now with how we are set? How do you see it setting up? Where's the next big move going to come?
I think with the, you know, the trade with the way the markets are, I mean, with the currencies, indices, even the commodities, it's really going with the latest flow. So just with, you know, with euro dollar, I would just be going buying it until I got blown out, and I don't really, you know, obviously I'm going to have a stop loss in there, but I'm literally going with that. I'm going with the Dow. I'm going with those directions, and, you know, just see, you know, and gold. I can't argue with that either. I mean, it's just as solid as a rock. So I'm going to go with all those, knowing that so many people out there who just don't believe those moves. And while a lot of people don't believe the moves, I'm going to go with them.
Yes, your problem in trading, if you're tactically trading, because this sounds like a momentum chasing charter that you've described there.
Yeah.
And long run, I prefer not, if I'm not in early, to not be a chaser. But if we look at gold, as I've got it up now, I've no problem with people wanting to be long gold. I think if we do get that dollar strength come through, that's still be the time. It'll still have one more dip in it. But I would certainly say if you're not leveraged, it's certainly something to be accumulating. That's my take. I'm on the USD JPY short, because if it can't rally with this, if I had to take a trade, and I put, my personal view is stay out in the markets. It's non-directional and not making sense, and you usually lose. But if you want to trade short time frames, you've got Zach right there saying go with the momentum. And in the meantime, for me, I would be sitting and saying I'll be watching that USD-JPY as my lead indicator. That's great. Any final comments before we let you go, Zacharias?
I think that you sort of feel every Monday to the start of every week, think this is going to be the week where the market snaps and, you know, the relationships go back to normal. You know, maybe there'll be some fundamental trigger, some news event which does that. I suppose that's, you know, maybe this is the week. You know, there's this sort of new war thing going on in, I was saying, Azerbaijan and Armenia, or this sort of, you know, that, whatever, but something which will just trigger it.
Did someone find some extra oil in there?
Yeah, possibly. I don't think that. Well, I think these things now, these geopolitical things, you sort of think, oh, not again. I mean, just can't they just, you know, this is the 21st century. Can't we just leave all this stuff behind us now? Obviously not.
It seems to be the way. And I don't see it changing with Her Highness Hillary Rodham Clinton probably being the sanity election candidate in a Trump versus Clinton race-off. So they'll even have people begging for Clinton. Quite masterful construction, if you think about it.
The day that people beg for Hillary Clinton is a dark day for me.
It's a dark day for the world. But on that cheery note,
you know, she's also got that sort of the thing of, you know, we've had the first black president, we'll have the first woman president. I'm not sure what category will be after that, you know, the first intelligent president. I don't know, but let's see what happens.
Absolutely. We'll have both a lady in the Fed and a lady at the wheel. If that's a good sign for you for macroeconomics, then you carry on and you buy that momentum with Zach Mir. If you're a little bit itchy and nervous, you stay out until you can make sense and you watch that USD-JPY. With that summation, Zach, thank you for your time on the weekend. Thanks. Enjoy it out there, and we'll speak again soon.
Thank you.